Okay, top 10 marriage killers, Galatians chapter 5. It's going to be kind of an odd place for this. Paul said the top 10 marriage killer number one was a 44 Magnum. says Ted Bundy number one. Of course, 2 weeks ago, I preached on the topic of marriage that lasts. And, you know, last week, of course, Bobby preached for us. And like I said this a couple weeks ago, when you're doing something like a marriage, when you're doing something topical like that, you know, there'll be some stuff that'll overlap. Some of the things I'll talk about tonight, I probably talked about last week too. But that's all right, because repetitive stuff kind of has a tendency to sink in our heads. I'm glad the Markhams came, because I was worried, you know, you weren't going to hear about how to make your marriage last, and I was afraid that you might get on shaky ground, you might need some help, so I'm glad you're here so you can hear this. There, but Galatians chapter 5, verse 19, and the Bible says, "Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in times past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God." Of course, I was looking at the one murderers. That does have a tendency to hinder a marriage that lasts, but from last week. But I know that seems like an odd place from the Bible to talk about a marriage, you know, things that deal with the marriage. But what it is, it's a list of the works of the flesh, a list of the works of the flesh. And usually in a lot of our problems, and a lot of our problems in marriage problems are flesh problems. You know, that's the things, and we'll see as we go through some of the things in the list, we'll see that flesh problems are what causes the problems. And so we see there, you know, a list there. So the top 10 marriage killers, the very first one, and like I say, some of these will overlap a little bit. I'll probably talk briefly about this. Overcommitment and physical exhaustion. Overcommitment and physical exhaustion. I think last week I talked a little bit about this. It seems like everybody is busy, man. I mean, they got irons in the fire every which way. And, you know, one of the things, though, I talk a lot about that, about doing a lot of things, and will again. But one of the things I see with people today, they put themselves in a lifestyle that requires both people to work themselves to death in order to pay the bills. You know, it was just different in our day when we came up. You know, a lot of people, I think they want everything that their parents had. Their parents were married 40, 50 years, and they accumulated, and they want it all when they first get married. And, man, they get working and working, trying to make money. I've seen couples that maybe even worked at the same place, but they got on different shifts. One of them took a different shift because that shift paid more money than, you know, the other shift. And you know, boy, what a recipe for disaster there. I don't know. Maybe it's a recipe for success. I guess if you don't talk to each other all the time, hard to get into an argument, right? But you certainly open up the door for you know, somebody else to come into the picture, or somebody come into the scene, and you know, just then on top of that, then you go out and you get some pets, get you a couple dogs and cat, and you got to take care of those as well, and then you know, get the kids all signed up for every sports team, every, you know, basketball in the fall, and football, basketball, wrestling, you know, volleyball, chess team, golf team, track team. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention this while a little side note. They had that, was that a 3K? 5K. 5K race over there in Fincastle, wherever it was, and Damien ran in it. And out of 560-some, I think, contestants, Damien got 33rd place out of 560-some running in his race. Did his better time anyway. See, he was signed up for that, so there. But, you know, you get signed up for every kind of lesson, every kind of class that's out there, man, and you're running around between a job, between the kids. You got to work because, man, you got to pay them bills, and every time overtime is available, you got to get it because you got to pay off that car. You got two brand-new cars. You got a big house. I mean, it just gets to where you're worn out and exhausted, and then you don't have time for each other. Now, you know, there's a solution to the problem is, and some people actually are doing it, is downsize. Just cut back. Sell off a lot of that junk. You know, sell off. I mean, that's why the flea market down there is making a killing like it does every week, because people down there are selling off all the junk. But what happens is people like us go down there and buy their junk to add to our junk, And then they take the money they get and they buy the other junk. Everybody's junk just swapping around, and we end up piling up more stuff. You know, if you think about this, let me ask you, is the house, the car, the money really worth your marriage? The job, is it really worth your marriage? You know, that's what you really got to weigh out. And, you know, I don't think anybody goes into it and say, okay, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to work ourselves to death and get physically exhausted so our marriage won't last. You know, that's not the plan. They think, oh, we'll be able to do it. We'll go ahead. You know, but you get, you know, stress starts happening. And, you know, when you're around your spouse more than you are anybody else. So, you know, when you're in a bad mood and, all, you know, everybody, they see that, you know, and so it causes problems. When's the last time you had a nice, relaxed, enjoyable evening together? When's the last time I said a nice, relaxed, enjoyable? Sometimes even the date, it can get rushed. Like, all right, look, we got to jam it in right here because this is where we got a time slot. We can get it in right here. But what happens is you go out on the date, you're so tired, you know, you've fallen asleep. You know, before the date's over with, you don't know what happened. I've told this to you before. Alistair Begg was talking about, he's a preacher on there from Scotland, Ireland, somewhere. And he said, when I used to date my wife, when we were dating, he said, I'd go home and I'd lay awake for hours thinking about the last thing we said to each other. He said, now we've been married 20 years, I fall asleep before she gets done talking. So that's about the size of it. You know, that's what happens. So, you know, you go out, you're trying to get that in there, but you're so wore out. It doesn't work. So what happens is we end up giving our marriage relationship the leftovers of our life. Well, I guess the leftovers is better than nothing, but it's not optimal. You know, it's not the best, relationship. So number one, and I see it a lot today, it seems like we're so busy today, people overcommitted, physical exhaustion. Usually what happens too in overcommitment, from a church standpoint, that's what usually gets, God's usually what gets cut out. God's going to get cut out, man. People now, they can't come back to church tonight, Pastor Boy, because, you know, it's just so far to drive. Got to drive at 10 miles, and, man, we just wore out and tired, man. We got to go to work the next day, and we've just been running all day. You know, that's what you see, so God gets knocked off because of that. The second one, the number two marriage killer right there, I don't know that these are in prioritized order or not, selfishness and immaturity. Selfishness and immaturity, and they go together. They go together. You know, I tell this at weddings. Chris and Jamie gonna get married. I was kind of hoping they would come to get the advice, you know. But whatever. I'll tell them during the marriage. They won't remember nothing. I don't remember anything the preacher said when I got married, and the I do's, and that was it. But it's not a 50-50 proposition. It's a 100% 100%. Think about that. See, some people think about, what's a 50-50 deal? We're going in on it like a business, you know. You're going to go into business, 50%. No, it's got to be 100-100. Let me ask you this. Do you only want 50% of your spouse? Husband, you only want 50% of what your wife has? And wives, you only want 50% of your husband? Or you want all your husband, you want all your wife? That's the whole deal right there. So they look at it like that. That's boy, you know, it's my money. I've heard this one, man. You know, newlyweds, they get married and maybe they both got their own bank account, and everybody's like, oh, it's mine, this is mine, but this is my money. No, you get married, it's 100%, you know, in the pool right there. It all goes together. And you see with younger couples, they still got that. This is my stuff, and this is your stuff, and, you know, all that. And that's with immaturity. Selfishness goes along there. Selfishness is having too much concern with one's own welfare or interest, and having little or no concern for others. That's really what the definition of selfishness is. Putting others first is biblical, and the thing about it is, it's not the natural thing. See, we're naturally selfish. I've used the illustration before, little kids playing with toys. Kid can have a million toys sitting right here, and one kid wants to play with one toy over there, and this kid got to run over there, get that toy, and say no, and snatch it away, and want to add to this pile right here. See that? Did they learn that? No. It's natural. It just comes natural. They didn't learn that. You have to teach a child the opposite, how to share, and you know, parents, you've been down that road, sharing and all that, not be selfish. So we know that selfishness is a natural part of our sin nature. It's just something natural. So when we get married, you know, if you're not saved, I mean, if it's not a Christian marriage, you're gonna have to overcome this, you know, in a natural way, which is hard to do. It's not impossible, but you can do it. But see, in saved marriage, in a Christian relationship, we got some help. You know, if you're saved, you got the Holy Spirit of God, the love of God shed abroad in your heart, thinking about others, that's something natural. But, you know, even from the Christian viewpoint, we're taught that in the Bible. We still have to be taught about putting God first, putting others first. We still have to learn it. So it's a, you know, it's a natural thing to be selfish, and it comes with not to be selfish. It's a maturing process, maturing as a person, maturing as a Christian. Getting those ideals embedded in our mind. Selfishness is so embedded in our nature that it's the first thing we do, the last thing we see, and the hardest thing that we admit. We just naturally look out, and we even got a phrase I said last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago. Look out for number one, right? Isn't that a selfish statement? I'm looking out for number one. I'm going to get that last chicken leg off the plate instead of saying, here, dear, have a chicken. I usually am. Go ahead and have a chicken leg. See, so you have to, selfishness is a key characteristic of immaturity, and the more immature a person is, the more selfish that they are. You know, the world, they say there's two types of people. You got givers and takers. There's some people that are more naturally prone to be a giver and a taker. Now, if you get a marriage with one giver and one taker, there's probably going to be some tension there after a while, you know, because what happened, the old giver gets tired of giving and the taker wants to take more. You get two takers in the marriage. Now, you got a problem, huh? We're going to have a clash going on. Right off the bat, you're already on shaky ground. But man, think about this. You get two givers in a marriage. Oh man, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, it can be a beautiful thing. You get two givers, both trying to give, and everything falls into place when we get there. So when we mature as Christians, the very first thing, see, right off the bat, this is what Christians have to learn. Is that Jesus Christ becomes central in our lives. He becomes first. See, boy, what a lesson in already taking the selfishness away. You're putting Jesus Christ first. You can put Jesus Christ first, it's simple. Then after that, you can put your spouse next. They used to have the acrostic with the word joy. Jesus first, others second, self last. So that falls into the place there. So if you learn how to put Jesus first in your life, central in your life, not self, that's going to help you put your spouse first in your marriage. You know, this is an odd thing about, this is a biblical teaching, and it sounds like an odd thing, especially compared to the world's philosophy, that there's victory and surrender. Victory and surrender. This is biblical. I mean, boy, when you surrender to Christ, you're going to have victory there. You surrender to Christ, you're going to have victory in a whole lot of areas of your life, especially in your marriage area. You know, that's going to be paramount, because I know this for a fact, that Satan is at work on the families, because families are churches. You know, Satan's not attacking this building. He's attacking the people. And where he attacks the people is, man, he can get you at home. He can get you at home, he can get you at church. And so you always have to be aware of that. If he can get the families, you know what? I mean, listen, he can tear a church apart with the families. Because this is what usually happens. You get a big mess going on with a family, and somebody, if there's a divorce, one of them people's probably leaving, and sometimes both. Somebody's leaving. You know, so you done lost somebody. You lost a part of the body of Christ. You got kids involved. Next thing, so then the kids, if one of them stays, where are you going to see the kids every other week? They're going to be in the church every other week because they flip-flopping around. They're going right there. See, so it's already affecting the church family just by that right there. And then you get tensions going on, and everybody's mad at each other. So, boy, either they come together at church and sit there like this, you know, you can just look at them and think, oh, brother, I don't want to ask him what's going on, huh? Or, one of them don't come because they're mad at the other one, and so there's already got strife. And the one that does come is not thinking about a thing you got to say because they're thinking about how they're going to get even, with the spouse back at the house, or just thinking about their problem. And thinking about, oh, man, you know, and so they're sitting there steaming by the time they go. So, you know, Satan is attacking the family. He attacks us as church members, as individuals, attacking the church. But he gets in the home because that's going to end up getting in the church, as well. So spiritual selfishness and immaturity. The third thing is spiritual disobedience. Spiritual disobedience. When you disobey God, any area of your life, your marriage is in danger. When you disobey God, your marriage is in danger. And when we think about the Christian marriage, listen, we ought to have a better marriage than lost people. We got a lot more resources. I mean, we've got the whole God's Spirit living in our hearts, shedding the love of God abroad in our hearts. We've got God's Word to guide us right here. We're looking at that some. We've got Jesus Christ, a model of unconditional love to follow. I mean, we've got tons more resources than the world has. We've got that. Everything, when you think about it, everything, every area of a Christian's life ought to be better, or at least as good, and should be better, than anything else that's going on in the world. It just ought to be. You ought to be a better employee. You ought to be a better husband. You ought to be a better wife. You ought to be a better neighbor. You ought to be a better citizen. You know, I mean, everything in your life should be better if you're saved. I said last week, that the divorce rate in Christianity, in Christians or in churches, is the same as it is in the world. It's the same as it is in the world. So what does that tell us right off the bat when you boil it all down? It tells you this, that professing Christians are not living their lives according to the teaching and principles and values that they say that they believe. They're not living their lives according to what they say that they believe. Otherwise, it wouldn't be the same. I mean, man, we ought to get a 1% difference, right? We ought to be a little bit better than the world. I mean, I think it ought to be a whole lot better than the world, but man, we ought to be, it shouldn't be even with the world. And it should be ahead. But people, and I know this for a fact, I know that when it comes to living people's lives, that most professing Christians, I think I can safely say most do not, you know, really practice what they preach. I guess that's the easiest way of saying it. They don't really believe what they say that they believe. That ends up being an issue right there. Spiritual disobedience. I mean, if you're going to be disobedient to God, you're going to fail everywhere else. You know, you can't tell, be honest with God. The fourth thing is ineffective conflict resolution. Ineffective conflict resolution. I might have spoke about that a little bit a couple weeks ago as well. There was a preacher that he gave out these little wooden crosses. He had a marriage conference, and he gave all the spouses these little wooden crosses. And he said, look, this is what I want you to do. I want you to take that cross when you go home and put it in the room that you fight in the most with your spouse. That you fight in the most. And that way, when you get ready to get into an argument, you can look at that cross, you'll think about God's commands, and that maybe will help you, you know, not have that. So one lady walked up to him and said, hey, I need 5 more of those. I need 5 more crosses. You know, I'm going to put them in all the rooms that we have in the house. Listen here, let me give you some advice. And I don't have to give this advice. Well, no, maybe I do to married people. Some of you ones that aren't married yet, you listen up right here. And then some of you are that are married, don't think something's wrong with you. There is going to be conflict. Huh? This isn't like, oh, wow, our marriage really must be falling apart. It's going different because we're having conflict. So is everybody else. There's going to be conflict. That's just the way it is. You got 2 people. You know, they used to say about preachers, you get 3 of them together, you get 5 different opinions. I mean, it's the same way with marriages sometimes. You know, anytime you get people together, everybody's got their own opinion. Everybody's got different ideas how things ought to be done. And listen, it's not the one, like I said a couple weeks ago, it's not the one who shouts the loudest that wins the argument. I know it seems like it's what the difference is how you communicate in a conflict, how you deal with it. It's okay. It's okay to have a different opinion. That's not a problem. It's just how you talk about it, get everything, you know, right attitude, right tone in your voice, right heart, right head, get those things straightened out. You know, I think several preachers I know say this. Harold says it, and I think he got it from somebody else. But attitude determines outcome. Attitude determines outcome. You know how you can... as you mature, you learn how to do this. You get in an argument right there, and you can see that it's going to escalate. How many of you ever been in an argument like that? You see it escalate. And how many of you know that you could go ahead and say they said their piece, and you can go ahead and get ready to say yours, and you know if you do, it's just going to escalate. It's going to keep on escalating, and you just kind of stop right there and say, all right, well, you know. Because you know if you say what you want to say, it's just going to keep on going, right? Yeah, that's right. And so, see, that's part of the maturing process. That's part of it right there. Just kind of slow everything down, whoa everything down, and, handle conflict in a biblical way. I mean, you know, it's always a good idea to see somebody else's point of view, listen to their point of view, even though they could be wrong. You listen to their point of view, and you say, well, let me tell you my point of view and why I'm thinking this way and then why you're thinking that way. kind of work it out and say, okay, well, I see, going to have to come to some mutual ground here. And, you know, usually a bunch of hollering and slinging and flinging and all that doesn't usually accomplish a whole lot, does it? Other than you got to go down to Walmart or wherever and get you another TV set. That usually doesn't get, you know, anything done. So, you know, effective conflict resolution. If it's if it's not effective, listen, it's going to kill the marriage. Huh? Everybody gets in bed as far as they can over on the edge, one facing that way, one facing that way. You can park a car in between them. Huh? How's that work? Wake up the next morning still mad? You ain't got nothing accomplished, right? You hadn't got it. Man, work it out. Well, actually, the Bible tells us not to let the sun go down on your wrath. You know, you're supposed to settle it before you go to bed. You know, get things worked out. Sleep a lot better, too. And then number five, here's a big one right here. Unrealistic expectations. Man, if this is something that every person that's going to get married needs to have counseling on this right. Find out, this is what you find out. You get the husband in the room there and you say, okay, listen, tell me what your expectations are. He'll tell you, write it all down. Get the bride-to-be, come in, all right, give me your expectations. What do you expect from the marriage? Write it all down. And just about 100% of the time, they're not the same. Not unless you get a couple real grounded Christian folks came up, maybe already had some teaching like this, they kind of know. Most of the time, the expectations aren't. And the main reason is because, listen, if you haven't figured this out by now, men and women are different. You know, the men are waffles and the women are spaghetti. You know that deal right there. We're waffles, we got everything. And women are, you know, doing everything like that. And so we're just different. We're going to look at things different. And, you know, what you want, and this is another thing you have to do in counseling. A lot of times, so you find out, you think you know what your wife wants. You think you know what your wife wants. This is going to make her happy. And it ain't, no, that new Model 70 Winchester is not what's going to make that ain't going to make Christine happy, Paul. As much as you wish it would. Look here, honey, look what I got. That's not going to make her, you know, we think we know what's going to make them happy. And I mean, sometimes it's even in the thing where you try to help them out and this and that. You know, it might not be what she particularly wants. And sometimes with the women, too, they think, oh, boy, this is going to be what my husband might want. And, might you know, but no, it might not be exactly what he wants either, you know. You can talk about this till you're blue in the face. Adrian Rogers has probably got some of the best stuff out there, the Ministry of Marriage, and man talks about that. And, you know, the man, he wants to, it's like the old primal instinct. The man wants to feel like the hero. Man, when we were kids, I'm going to tell you what, just what men do. Girls will watch, I remember back, I had a lot of girls. We had a lot of boys on my street, which we talked about at the funeral, but I had some girls too. I had one, two, three, right across there, four down that way, another one over here, five. There was a lot of girls, and I watched the girls at play, thinking back about this. You know what the girls did? The girls would play like house. Y'all girls do that? Did you play house? And you get your dolls and your tea set, and you do all that. And you wanted to play house because, see, you're dreaming. You're looking forward to the time when you got a home, man. That's what you really wanted to fix all up. Now, the guys, we played like war. Or, you know, rescue the damsel in distress. We wanted to rescue the damsel in distress. And you go over and we would be the hero, see? We would either rescue the damsel in distress or we'd get killed trying so she would feel sorry for us, you know, and really like. And see, so what it is, a guy wants to feel like the he-man, protector of the family. Anybody comes in here, it's death, you know. And see, what a guy really needs, even if he don't know he needs women to build him up to where he's like the provider, even if he's not. Build him up that he's the provider, that he's the hero, that he's the, you know, got the muscle, he's going to be the, you know. Because, I mean, you know how it was when we played war movies and stuff? Listen, we never died. You couldn't kill me. Huh? You know, you had the thing, you shoot your toy gun, boom, boom, I got, no, you didn't, you missed, man, I'm telling you, missed, just barely grazed me, man, right here, but I got you, man. You know, we had a big fight over who got who, right, because, see, you couldn't die, because you're the hero, you got to be the hero, every guy want to be the hero. Well, see, guys want the wives to make them feel like that. That's what they really need way down inside. And see, the women, they want, their home is like the thing, you know, they want their home and all that to be just right, and they really care about that, and they want, I mean, and they need, you know, they need, actually, they need the hero a lot of times. They want that. They want it all, you know, the knight in shining armor. We talk about, oh, you're thinking about a knight in shining armor. Well, yeah, you want the night to come riding in and take care of it, ride off into the sunset and live happily ever after. That's in the movies, but, you know, that's how it is. So there's things that are different. So really, you got to sit down. You got, there's good books and stuff you can read. Find out, you know, you think you know what your spouse wants, but it might not be exactly, it's what you want to want, but it might not be what they want. Now, Christine, you get Paul a new Model 70 and bring him and say, look, honey, I got this for you. He's going to say, yeah, man, my wife loves me. I mean, you know, that, it ain't going to work in reverse. You know, that's just the way it is right there. So, you know, there's different things that you know, you have to do. So you have these, there's no perfect marriage. Listen, the problem is because we're two imperfect people that are going in a marriage together. Now, usually all newlyweds, they plan on having a perfect marriage. Yeah, I know my parents' marriage wasn't that good, and I know a lot of marriages don't work, but I'm going to have a good marriage. That's what the plan is. I mean, you know, it'd be kind of stupid to start off thinking, hey, we're going to get married. Boy, we're planning on having an imperfect marriage. I mean, you know, that's just not a real, I told the pastors one time, I said, man, I want to be the best, you know, the best preacher that I can be. I mean, you know, why would you aim for anything less? Well, you know, I just want to be a sorry preacher. They were laughing. I said, well, why, what else would you look for? You know, I'm going to be a sorry preacher? No. Wouldn't I want to be a sorry marriage or a sorry husband or a sorry wife? No, that's not what we do. Now, listen, not all expectations are unrealistic. There may be some expectations of you that you can meet, both either side. They're not unrealistic expectations. They're things probably that you should be, you know, going along with. Because not everything, it can't fall on, when you get back to the unselfish thing. Everything that you might have to do as a husband or you might have to do as a wife and fall in these categories, it might not necessarily be things you want to do, you know. But just because you don't want to do it doesn't mean you can't do it. That's not an unrealistic expectation. Just to go along with some things. If that's going to make your wife happy, you know, it's not going to kill you. This might burn some of your time. You know, you can think of a million other things that you ought to do, but you're spending time, you know, with your wife. Spending time with your wife. And so that, women really like that. I mean, more, you know, man, I was an only child. I grew up, man, so I was used to being by myself. And I, you know, took a long time to break me of that. I didn't mind spending X amount of time just by myself. It was okay. You know, but most, you know, women usually like the connection. Just got to be together, and that's okay. You know, that's okay. So not all expectations are unrealistic. It's give and take from both sides. I'm sure that she's going to, you know, I go out there, you know, I shot a deer. I get a dead deer on the back of the truck. I say, hey, honey, man, come out here and look at this deer. Now, she don't care nothing about looking at a dead deer. She'd rather see the live deer, you know. But because I'm happy about it, she comes out and looks at it. Ooh, yeah, boy, that's great. And I can see that her face is all scrunched. Yeah, man, that's great. Lion, boy, she got to get out of here. But see, now she'll eat them. She likes to eat them, but, you know, but she'll come out there and look. I say, oh, come out here and look at this. Look, come here and look at this. She's not really that interested, but she does. I'll get the car all cleaned up. Come out here and look at this car. Look at that thing. What that thing's shining. Look inside. Look at that. Yeah, boy, it looks great. Back on, she got something else to do, right? So that's not, sometimes unrealistic expectations, Satan uses those as an emotional trap. Because if you got an unrealistic expectation and there's a lot of them and they keep not being met, it affects you here, see? And you start getting, you know, get depressed or you get angry or you get hurt or it's a trap that Satan can use to get, you know, when you have unrealistic expectations. You know, and sometimes we're looking for perfection. Well, I just wish we did this. I wish this was just perfect. Well, it might not be perfect, but it might be better, you know, good. It might be better than it could have been. Might, you know, it might not be a perfect thing. Sometimes you're looking for perfection, and it's just not going to be perfect. And so if you're looking for perfection, you're going to be disappointed. When if you just look for a movement in the right direction, it would help you out there. It was a husband that said to his new wife, he said, now that we're married, I hope you won't be offended if I point out some defects in your life. The bride said, not at all, honey. We need to face these things. After all, these are the things that kept me from getting a better husband to start with. Amen. Now, here's one right here you wouldn't think that you'd have to talk about in church, but you do. Alcohol and drug abuse. Marriage killer number, six. Alcohol and or drug abuse. Man, it's epidemic in the world. It's epidemic. Alcohol problems, drugs now, prescription problems, drug problem going on, a lot of other things going on. And you couldn't count the number of marriages that have been destroyed by these things. People I've known from years ago, just their marriages went south. We had some neighbors in Northern Virginia, and I think the girl's next door, her brother, man, he's the one that introduced drugs to his wife, man, and she ended up going off being a crackhead, man, left him, was running all over the country, and she got in a bad car wreck and got her back broke out riding around looking for dope one night, got in a car wreck, broke her back, paralyzed for life, and he told me, he said, you know what, he said, crazy thing is, she didn't even want to do it, and I talked her into it, and then later on, she got to be a crackhead and was going all over, left him, and took off, man. I mean, there's millions of stories like that. And some marriages that don't end up in divorce still are not good marriages because of alcohol and drug abuse that's going on, right there in the home. It just wrecks things. Listen, one of your spouses is an alcoholic and you can't plan anything because you don't know what kind of shape they're going to be in. You can't have anybody come over because you don't know what kind of shape they're going to be in. You don't know what kind of mood they're going to be in. I mean, you just can't do anything because you got that going on. I see marriages. It's just really not nowhere near what it could be. Now, here's another one that goes along with another point that probably goes along with number one, whatever number we're on now. Excessive debt and overspending. Excessive debt and overspending. And I touched on a couple of those things. A lot of younger couples, they want everything that their parents have right away. And listen, I'm going to tell you something. Parents haven't helped this out either. Man, I'll tell you some of the crazy, I was talking to Hannah there about this earlier. Man, how many of you, when you was a kid, your mom and dad went out and bought you a pretty brand new car, boy, just the color you wanted with the right color interior and all that and paid for your get it all on your insurance and all. Man, alive. And kids, oh, no, I just don't like it. I just don't like it color on the interior. I like the outside, but the interior just a little bit. I want a leather instead of cloth and all. And then that parent's strapped down buying this kid something. He's wrecking up his marriage trying to buy. When I was a kid, buddy, it didn't matter. If it was running, it could be monkey poop brown with red interior. We didn't care. One door painted another color, buddy. If it was running, we got it. And we worked to get it, buddy. My first car, I worked at a gas station for $1.75 an hour, and the bank was right across the street. When I got paid on Friday, I ran over 5 Mercury Montclair, boy, it was the cruiser. 390 in that thing, ugly as homemade soap, man. But I tell you what, it drove and we could ride around in that thing. Yeah, we went out and bought our cars. Man, we didn't have nobody buying us no brand new car. My next car, my grandfather gave me a 65 Rambler Marlin. They only made them for you. It was kind of neat. And I sold the other bomb for $150. And I had that car till after that, buddy. I was on my own, buying and stuff. So parents didn't help the kids with the mindset that everything's got to be brand new, that everything's got to be like up to speed, And so, what happens is you get that mindset, we got to keep up with the Joneses, man. Well, look, they got a 63-inch TV or whatever size they make them, and we only got a 48. We got to go get a bigger TV because they got one and we got TVs and furniture. I probably don't even have it now. I was trying to think. we didn't worry about matching furniture. Man, I mean, you had a piece from here and a piece from there and nothing matched. I was way up in my marriage before we had anything that matched. The only thing that matched was nothing matched. it was all like a conglomeration. I still got some of it there, right there as well. But people, man, they get married, they got to get a brand new house and they got to get brand new furniture and they got to get brand new cars and, man, they're strapped down and trying to keep up. And I'm going to tell you, it takes its toll on society. Everybody's living on a credit card. Everybody was living on debt, and of course it inflates the economy up to where you can't afford to buy anything. And it encourages the materialistic mindset that we got to have all this. And so a lot of times you just see people, young couples particularly, just first started out in marriage, man, they're just strapped down financially. They can't. It's stressing them out. I worked with a guy one time. He worried me somewhat. He'd ride to work with me, man. He would go in there. You remember those Entman's? They make them cakes, things. I'm getting a message from God. Those Entman cake things, and like honey bun things. You buy them big ones, you know, and you cut them up like coffee things in the morning in a blue and white box. He would buy a whole one of them and a cup of coffee, and he was moaning and groaning to me. He said, "Man, I'm thinking about killing myself." I said, "Why are you thinking? You know, it makes you nervous." I said, "Why are you thinking about killing yourself?" He said, "I owe $30,000 on a credit card." I said, "What'd you do this weekend?" "Oh," I said, "I took the wife and kids. We all went down to King's Dominion." "You got $30,000 on a credit card, you took your family to King's Dominion, and you bought a whole thing." I mean, he didn't buy the little cake and a coffee. He bought one of them whole things that you feed the whole family with, and he ate the whole thing and a cup of coffee. And I said, "And you're thinking about killing yourself." I said, "Man, you just got..." "So what you need to do is go get you a part-time job on the weekends, get you a job Saturday and Sunday, or winter Saturday, you know, I mean, because I wouldn't save him. Get you a job and pay this bill off." I said, and you know, quit talking crazy about this." He said, "My wife would be better off if she'd get the insurance money and get out of debt." I said, "Yeah, but where are you going to be?" I mean, you know, crazy kind of thinking right there. All because, and there are people that do take their life because they get stressed out over money. But they've done it to themselves. They spent. And, it's crazy. And like I said, then we go to the overcommitment in number one, and physical exhaustion, going right along with excessive debt and overspending because you're trying to pay all the bills. And when you add all those things together, what's your marriage look like? Stressed out, burned out, and fizzled out wrecks. That's what it all boils down to. You can't do anything because, you know, money is just, you know, you burned it up. Another one, lack of physical intimacy. Lack of physical intimacy. Sexual frustration at home is opening the door for Satan to offer you a solution to the problem. And that's a problem that we see in the world today. Because this is what happened. This is what faced it right here. You already haven't had, you got ineffective conflict resolution, so you're already riled up, right? Now, you get stressed out. You don't feel like having intimate relations because you're mad at each other. Got the car parked between you and the bed. You're facing the other way. You're riled up. You're mad. You know, you don't feel close to each other. So that affects that. And so now, you know, it's, then people end up getting divorced. Somebody makes a nice comment at you at work. Your husband hadn't given you a comment lately. I heard a pastor, we went to the marriage conference, and Pat, they had a session on this right here. And the guy said, "Man, never do this. Try never to do this." And I tried never to do it, and I might have done it early when I was a pastor. But he said, say a woman comes in, got her hair a little different, looks all right. He said, "Man, whatever you do, don't comment on her hair. Don't say, boy, your hair looks real nice." You know why? Because her husband might not have told her. And if you do, and she hasn't had that kind of attention from a man, her husband, and you're just innocent, you're just thinking, or your dress looks nice. Or, you know, all of a sudden there's something that she hadn't gotten at home that suddenly you gave her unintentionally. And then something that sparks in her, and now all of a sudden, you got to be careful with that. Be careful with, you know, and I tell you another thing around churches, they talked about it. All that hugging and stuff between opposite sex that's not your, I mean, I don't want somebody hugging all over my wife, huh? You just got to be careful. It can get to be excessive things. Everybody's, doing that. So, you've got, because you don't know what's going on in somebody. And you start giving them compliments and things that they haven't gotten from home, it could work either way. You can start something there and you're going to have yourself a mess right off the bat. Society glamorizes infidelity. It's on as the world turns. I mean, what else do they have on there? I don't hardly watch it, but I can just guess. Do they have any, you know, everything's about who's having whose baby and who's getting an affair and getting divorced and going here and going there, and they glamorize all that. They got websites out there. You know, life is short. Have an affair. I think Harold was talking about that one. They got a website. That's what their thing on it is. Life is short. Have an affair. They'll set you up on a computer so you can have an affair. Boy, that's a heck of a note right there. And then we take sin and we call it something else. They say that's what they call it. Well, have an affair. No, that's not what it is. It's adultery is what it is. They call it, or somebody slept with somebody. No, you ain't going to get in problem. You ain't no problem if you're sleeping with somebody. That's not what's going on. But they call it where they're sleeping with somebody. No, they're having an intimate relationship with somebody that's not their spouse. And so you got a problem. And listen, infidelity in a marriage is usually a sign that there's some deeper problems at home. there's some other problems at home that can be avoided, you know, if you watch after. Now, there's no excuse for adultery, by the way. Just because you got some problems at home, well, I'm just going to throw in the towel and something else. But like I say, Hollywood tries to glamorize it, but sin's sin. You can put a bow tie on a pig and it's still a pig when it's all said and done. I mean, that's just the way it is. And then here's another problem that we see in the home. Pornography. Pornography, multi-billion dollar industry. There's no way it's a multi-billion dollar industry when America is supposed to be calling itself, which I know is a lie, calling itself a Christian nation. And pornography is a multi-billion dollar a year industry. There's Christians that are that are watching it, that are partaking, looking at it, and taking care of that. Listen, and this is what happens. You think if it's in your heart and it's in your mind and you think it doesn't affect you, it does affect you spiritually. It breaks your relationship with God. It affects you spiritually. It's going to cause you some problems. And another thing, while we're on that topic right there, pornography, it kind of goes hand in hand, but it has to do with the internet. Chat rooms. You ain't got no business chatting with somebody that's not, you know, you get on them chat rooms, you don't know who you're talking to on the other end. Kids all the time, you get kidnapped and sexual things go on. People, they're chatting, they don't know who they're talking to on the other end. People get in there and start chatting with somebody of opposite sex and going on and some relationship starts up. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, man. Get out of here looking up your old girlfriend from high school on the internet, all that kind of crazy stuff, huh? I'm going to tell you what, man, it's going to get you in all of it. It can get you into trouble right there. Listen, if you spend as much time with your spouse as most people do today messing around on Facebook and texting and all that Twitter stuff, people coming on, yeah, I saw on Facebook this, I saw on Facebook that, I saw on Facebook that. But I tell you, preacher, I just ain't got time to help out there at the church. You've been on Facebook for days. You know everything about everybody. Man, I can give you a whole list of everybody's problems because they've been on Facebook, but they can't do anything for God when it comes down to the church because they're spending all their time on Facebook. Man, I'll tell you what, so it's a problem. It can be a problem in your marriage. You're spending all that time, one spouse in one room on Facebook and the other one on the other room on Facebook and everybody's on their phone. Everybody got the phone out, man, been doing this. And, you know, I was looking around sometimes even in my own house. My whole family's in there. I look, everybody's on the phone but me. I'm watching TV. Randy and I got out. I told y'all at the hotel, we got out there in this whole van load of people on a bicycle. They were doing some kind of bicycling. They got trails around there. I was leaning out on the balcony. I looked down there at where they was parked. I said, hey, Randy, come here. You come out there. 15 of them, every single one of them standing there just like this. They're all standing there in a big circle. Everyone's standing up, everyone looking at their phone, not talking to each other, nothing. Every one of them on the phone. I said, I ought to take a picture of that. I had to get my phone out to do it. So we see pornography, internet, what you call social media, I guess say, can be a major problem in your marriages today. And then the 10th thing, lack of commitment. Lack of commitment. You know, when there's a commitment, when there's a real commitment, divorce is never an option. It's never an option. A lot of people think, boy, man, I remember my, you know, man, I'm having a lot of problems with my wife. I'm having a lot of problems with my husband. I'm going to get divorced. Well, you're just going to have a whole new set of problems, just a different kind of problems. I had a buddy, this was back in the 80s. Yeah, early 80s. My buddy, man, he was a union electrician, man. Him and his wife got divorced. $600 a month child support back in the day. That's a problem. That's a problem, buddy, back in the 80s. I said, good night. I couldn't have done that. I would have been broke. They just had to lock me up. I could not, with my job, I couldn't have done, paid what he had to pay. Yeah, you know, so, oh, well, you know, I'm having all these problems. I'm going to get rid of my problems. I'm going to get divorced. Now, you can get rid of them problems. You're just going to have some more. You know, man, you got kids. Shuffling them back and forth, paying this and that, and taking care of all that, it generates another set. This is what we need to do. Listen, you got to guard your relationship as though you were fighting for your life. Guard your relationship as though you were fighting for your lives. Value your spouse. Value your marriage. Marriage was made in heaven, but it takes down-to-earth maintenance to make it work. It just don't happen. So many people, I think, today, they go into marriages. We're going to get married. Sit down. There it is. We're married. We're going to have a marriage. No, you take some work. It takes some effort. It takes some changing on both sides. People got to change a little bit. You went from being a single you to a double you. You got two of you now, you know, one flesh, one flesh. So listen, it can be done, and it's worth it. It's worth it to put the effort in. If you saw enough in each other to get married in the first place, then it's still worth putting the effort out to make you married. Amen. Let's all stand. Paul, be coming, lead us in.